The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
This week's Parsha is Parsha's Mishpotim. Ve'ela ha-mishpotim asher tosim lifneihem. These are the laws which you shall place before them. The Targum says, ve'elen dinayohu, di tzade kidomehen. These are the dinim that you shall organize before the people. These laws, which are referred to as Mishpotim or Dinim, they represent the majority of mitzvahs, Benorim Lechavere, obligations that one has to his fellow man, and Hogos, the Yishuva Olam, Yishasvus Odom, Besech Yishuva Neodom, how a person should conduct himself in his interactions and dealings, because he's a member of society. They're referred to as dini mamonos, monetary laws. They tell us what is the responsibility of a person to his fellow man, and his fellow man to him. Schuyes, what is one person's right and the other one's right. And in English, we would refer to this area, this broad area, as civil law, rights, responsibilities, liabilities, and so forth. And to mention a number of the areas covered here in our parsha, or in other places of the Torah, this is the major source, Parshas Mishpatim, for this area of law. But there are other places in the Torah also which deal with them. So to mention, for example, what they are, what laws are covered, how a person should treat his servant, the law dealing with he who kills, if he kills with intention, if he kills by accident, a kidnapper, mazik, damages, odama mazik, if a person damages another person or he damages another person's property, momana mazik, if a person's property damages another person or he damages other people's property. All different types of nezikin. But the Torah branches, puts them in different branches. For example, we have the shor, the bor, the esh, the responsibilities that a person has over his animals, or if he creates an obstacle in a public place, or if he has a fire in his property and it goes out and causes damage. And in regards to his animals, if his animals eat something, or they gore, or they trample, we have the dinim of Ganev of Gzela, of theft, burglary. We have the laws of Hashem and Aseich of Hashel, someone who accepts, assumes guardianship, or someone who hires something or borrows something, so he has to assume certain degrees of responsibility over it. We have the laws of Hamalva Vahaleva, the lender, the borrower, collateral, ribis, interest, Dine Edis Vidayonim, laws of witnesses, judges, Hashovas Haveda Vahatzolas Maman Havera, Shil Havera, the obligation to return a lost article to its owner, or what degree does a person have to go in order to protect someone else's property or money, ownerships, mekach u'memker, trading, onais, nos, momen, profiteering, overcharging, midu mishkol, fair weights and measures, land rights, partnerships, neighbors, the responsibilities of one neighbor to another and the rights that one has, what to do in his property, even though by doing so he might infringe on his neighbor's rights. A pale and a balabais, the laws of the employer and the employee, and so on. Now, as one can see, we're dealing here with laws which are very, very deep, very vast, and very many and complex. Look in the world that we live in. You have your commercial world. There, the most brilliant minds are laboring and are debating and are arguing in order to try to create laws, fair laws, in regards to land rights, rights of labor and unions, zoning restrictions, restrictions of free trade, usury acts, public and private liability, and so forth. And so do we see from the Torah the vastness of this area. Firstly, here on Parshas Mishpatim, Rashi has an enormously large commentary. More than that, if you look into the Mishnah, this is known as Seder Nezikim, and you look into the Gemara, the Talmud, and the Shulchan Aruch, which is written on this area, Choshen Mishpat. This represents the greatest single area in the entire Jewish law, in the Talmud. We also see that the Chachmei HaTalmud, the sages of the Talmud, the early commentators, the codifiers, Poskim, the later commentators, Shainim, the Achreinim, they have probably elaborated more on this area than any other area in the Shas. And with enormous elaboration, labor, iyun, thought, and efforts. And the Mishnah tells us at the end of Masechta Baba Basra, Omar Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Shmuel says, Hareitze Shiyachim, if someone wants to become wise, Yaseg Bedine Momonos, let him spend time studying and occupying himself, delving into the Dine Momonos, the monetary laws. Shein Lacha Mikzeya Betora Gedele Mehen, because you do not have a mikzeya. Mikzeya is a zovis, a corner, an area in the entire Torah that is so deep and vast. Shein kemayon aneveya, they are like an ever, never ending flowing spring. And this is why it states here, ve'ele hamishpotim asher tosim lifneihem. What does it mean, asher tosim, you shall place? And the Targum says, Dita Sadir Kodomehen. Rashi explains, Omale HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe. Moshe said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, Leisal al dait kolemer, Eshne lohem haperek vahalocho, Eshane lohem haperek vahalocho, Beis o gimel pomim. I will teach them the halocho, the law, two or three times, as they stood before him, kemishnosai, until they know it by heart. Beni matriach atzmi la'avinom taimi adover u'peirusheho. But why do I have to go into the enormous trouble to explain the intricacies and the depth and all the detail of it. I'll tell them the halacha. We'll chaser it, we'll review it a number of times, and they'll know it and finished. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, no. These are the mishpatim which you shall set before them. Kishulchan o'orech. You shall set it like a set table, umuchan le'achol lifnei ha'odom, which when you invite someone over, you don't put the whole meal in one pot and tell them to take from it. But you put everything in its proper place. The appetizer in one place, the vegetables in another place, the next course in another place. Kishulchan orech hamuchan le'odom le'achol behem. That's how Moshe was commanded to teach these mishpatim. And why do we find this here? Here specifically, not in other areas of the Torah, because this is the most complex area of the Torah. Therefore, it would seem logical to say that this area is a very, very specialized area. And it's for Chachomim Gedalim. It's for the very, very wise and the very, very brilliant. It's for the Harvard lawyers or the Yale lawyers, or for those that want to become great Rabbonim or Dayonim or judges. They have to go into all of these laws with great detail and with great labor and with great effort and pain in order to make from them a Kishulchan Aruch, where it's clear to crystallize perfect order. If that's the case, then we can ask a very, very good question. And many do ask this question, especially in our times. The very, very old custom, going way back amongst Jews, and this was the custom in the last tekufa, in the last era, last 50, 60, 70 years before the Holocaust. In Lithuania also, because in many other places, the old customs became distorted. But what was it? That this was the Mikseya Shebashas. This was the corner, the area of Shas, which was rogel more, which more people learned and more people spent time on this area than any other area. And we're not speaking about the specialists. We're not speaking about the great Chachomim. But in all of the yeshivas, to call B'nai Yeshiva, to all the members of the yeshiva, and in all the chaburis of Balabatim Lomdim, this was first choice. What did they learn? Yeshivas didn't learn Masechta Shabbos, Masechta Megillah, Masechta Tainus, Masechta Beitza, Masechta Chagigo, Meikot, Masechta Nidah, Masechta Aveda Zorah, or Kochi, or Taras. Actually, it was the Chofetz Chaim who had to put emphasis on Kochi, that they should learn it in the Kollels. But what was learned? What was learned first all over the time was Nezikin. Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba Basra, and so forth. And the same thing with the Chaburas of the Balabatim, of the Lomdim. This is what they learned, and this was what the main effort was put into. The great Lomdim learned all of Shas, but that was learned later. It was learned in the Kollels. It was learned when someone got older. Or maybe it was learned at the night Seder. And not only was this the case in all of the great Yeshiva Gedolos, but even in Yeshiva Ktanos. In Lithuania and Poland, there was the system of Yeshiva Ktanos that when a bocher left cheder, if he could, Lithuania, the majority left cheder, that was it. Very, very poor. They had to go back home to help work. But there were those that went on to Yeshiva Ktana, Yeshiva Tana is what we would call a high school yeshiva. That was from bar mitzvah till about 17 years old. And that's where they started to really concentrate on Gemara. What did they learn? They learned Bava Kama, Bava Mesiyah, Bava Basra. First they learned Nezikin, many times. They also learned Noshim. But the main emphasis was on Nezikin, even in the Yeshiva Ktanos. And not only in the Yeshiva Ktanos, but even in the Chadorim, where they didn't learn Gemara, but they learned Mishnah. It says, Ben Esel Mishnah, a person is 10 years old, it's time for him to learn Mishnah. After in the Chadorim, after they knew the whole Chumash, and they knew El Tanakh, came time for Mishnah. What did they learn? They didn't learn the Mishnah of Brochis. Like many today say, you must teach them something that is nearer to them, closer to them. They're not going to be judges. They don't have animals. You learn brachas with them, or you learn Megillah with them. No. The favorite prokim that they would start them on is Arv Ovis Nezikin. That's Baba Kama. Or Amini Yeches Akad. Someone left a jug in the street and someone else came and tripped over it. Who's responsible? And meanwhile, he broke my jug. Or Eilu Mitzias, you find a lost article, what do you do with it? Or Shnai makes him a talis, two are holding onto a talis, this one says I found it, this one says I found it. Or Hamaskid, I gave something to someone else to watch, and he didn't take care of it. Fact is, someone told me the story, that in the yeshiva, of Rav Moshe Feinstein in the Yeshiva Ketana in the Cheder. He heard one day that the Mechanchim, the faculty, decided that we must learn different things with them. We must learn other Mesechtas, things that are more relevant to their everyday life, or perhaps that a child will understand better. And therefore, they started to teach them other things. So the story that I heard is that Ramesha never went there to call a meeting. This time he went and he called a meeting. This is how upset he was with the plan. And he says, why are you changing what was tradition for days, for generations? I recently heard... This Maya Ribbitson, she should be well read to me from, there's a book which came out recently on the life of Rabbi Yishev Salavetchik, Zichrein Vrocha. This was the grandson of Rabbi Chaim, the son of Rabbi Meshe Salavetchik, the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Zerisa Ochonon. And basically it's full, not so much of his life, but it has his writings there, his droshes and so forth. So where he writes, he has a drosha. And he mentions what we mentioned. He says the first Mishnah he was ever taught, I believe he said, was in Eilu Mitzias. And then Shnai makes it. He said, all Nezikin, all this area. But he was bringing out another point, which I hadn't been aware of. He says in Lithuania and Poland, he says it was tradition going way back that we know there was a Chevre Shas. Every shul and shtibl had a chevre shas that was a group. You were free to join it. But they learned Gemara every day. They would come together and one would say a shir for everyone. Or sometimes maybe two would learn on their own, but they would all learn the same thing every day. And then there would be Masai Masechtas. They would conclude Masechtas during the course of the year. So he said they had a Shabbos which was considered their Shabbos. The different groups had different Shabboses, different times when they would come together and celebrate what they did. Because you do a mitzvah, it's brought you have to celebrate. For example, it was traditional that the Chevre Kedisho, they would make it would be their day in many places on the Shabbos before Zayin Adar. See, before the 7th of Adar, because that was the day that Moshe Rabbeinu died. So that was their day. So he says, when was the day of the Chevr Shas? When it was their Shabbos and they took over the shul and they gave out the aliyahs and they made a big kiddush. Parshas Mishpatim. He says, Parshas Mishpatim, that was the day of the Chevr Shas. And he says, that goes back so far that he doesn't know where it, how far back it goes. Okay. Now, we have this question. Here we're talking about something at this level for a Yale lawyer. On another hand, we're talking that not only the Balabatim Lomdim wasn't left for the great Rabbonim, and not only the Yeshiva Gdolos, and not only the Yeshiva Ktanos, but even the Hadorim also. Let's see if we can get some beer, some explanation in this. Firstly, this that people say, that today it's better that we should learn something that is more relevant to everyone. For example, the Masechtas we mentioned, Shabbos, Beitza, Megillah, or Shulchan Aruch Or HaChaim, but we have to deal with every day. That also was learned in the yeshivas. But a very, very small portion of time was, an emphasis was placed on that compared to this. It's better we should teach a child, spend most of the time on Hilchos Brochas. He should know what Brochas to make. And Hilchos Tefillah, he should know how to daven. And Hilchos Tzitzis. And Tefillin. And so forth. But this, what relevance does it have? Unless you're a rov, you're a dayan, you're a judge. This statement is a statement of stupidity. It's sheker, it's false. Because nizikin, if we're speaking of relevance or irrelevant, irrelevance is the most relevant Seder HaShas, area of Shas. Far more relevant than all of the others. Why do I say this? Because all of us live together with other people. We do not live an isolated life on some island. And because of that, we have to constantly interact with other people. Are we expert? Not really, not for others, for ourselves. In the laws, that when we're interacting with other people and we're using something of theirs, what is the degree of responsibility? We're always using things that belong to other people. There's a Gemara in Baba Basra, one of hundreds of Gemaras. It says that there were Arba Yoshval Asafsa, four were sitting on a bench which belonged to someone else. Fifth one came and he sat also down on the bench, and the bench broke. Who is responsible? Who's accountable? Who has to pay? The four claim, we didn't break it. The fifth one said, I couldn't have broken it by myself. If you four weren't there, I wouldn't have broken it. It's a long sugya with many shitas, many opinions in the Rishayim. Every day we use things that belong to other people. Do we know the laws of what we're allowed to do with it and what we're not allowed to do with it? All of us have mazikin, potential things in our property that can damage. Many of us have dogs. Do we know what responsibility we have to assume over them? All of us drive cars. Driving a car, you're driving something which has the potentiality of being lethal. A person, heaven forbid, heaven forbid, he damages someone. It's a whole sugis in the Gemara. Scratches a car, damages a person. Heaven forbid, he kills the person. And he says it was accidental. This is a shail of golus. According to the halach of the Gemara, he might have to go live in golus, in one of the special cities. We all are involved in some type of business. Do we know the laws of profiteering, of how much you are allowed to charge on something? Do we know the laws of borrowing? Do we know the laws of interest? Do we know the laws of unfair competition? These are great areas in Bar Metzia. Perkei Zoneshech. Mafkid, other prokim. Many, many of us employ people by us. We have workers. We have servants. Do we know the laws of how heavy can we make our demands on them? What responsibilities we have to them? How many hours can we make them work? How much rest time must we give them? What kind of pay must we give them? Now, the mind turns off on that. That's not my ASIC, someone says. Now, I have to know what makes tzitzis kosher and how to daven Shmein Esrei. But what about that? These are great prokim, great chapters. Bar Metzia, Haseicher Esapeil, you hire a worker, Haseicher Esaumnim. From the other aspect, at one time or the other, most of us work for other people. What are the responsibilities of the worker to the employer? Is one allowed while he's working and being paid to speak on the telephone to his friend, a personal call during hours? Or is that considered gezel? Is that considered theft? Is one allowed, if he doesn't feel just not so good, he'll take off, but meanwhile he'll collect his check at the end of the month? If he's not allowed, Torah considers him a first class ganav. There's a sugi in the Gemara, is one allowed to stay up late at night? I want to stay up late at night watching television. Or better yet, I want to stay up late at night doing a mitzvah. I'm going to go to a chasna and I don't want to wait till the last dance. But meanwhile, my effectiveness in my position the next day is certainly going to be affected without a good night's sleep. But who's going to lose? My employer is going to lose. That might be gross theft. This is sugyus in Bar Metzia. Fact is, it's brought even by malamdim. Teachers are not allowed to stay up late at night. How many times do we have in our possession something that belongs to someone else? How are we supposed to care for it? We all are neighbors, Hilchishchenim. That's Perek Hashel in Bar Metzia. We all are neighbors. Are we allowed to make a fire in our yard where the smoke goes into our neighbor's yard and tell him that's his problem? Are we allowed to blast our radios and affect him with the noise? These are all sugyos in Perek LeYachbor and Baba Basra. And on and on and on with millions of dinim. Far more relevant than tzitzis and tefillin. If you look in Shulchan Aruch, the siman on tzitzis is this little. The siman on tefillin is this little. Look in Chayshin Mishpat, it's a sea, an endless sea that affects every movement of our lives as long as we live with people. So firstly, those who speak of that unfortunately, they are showing their ignorance in Torah. And of course one has to learn this. But there's another reason. There's a further reason. There are a number of reasons. We won't be able to go into all of them now. We've spoken about these in the past, but there's another reason. And from here we can understand perhaps why it's chosen to teach even youngsters, to start them off on this. If we look in Parshas Mishpatim, which we're dealing with, we see that it was preceded by the Ten Commandments. In Parshas Yisro, Yisanechi Hashem Alekecho, Naseres Hadibris, the Ten Commandments, which is basically the Kol HaTorah Kula, the entire Torah, was encompassed. If we go back to the beginning of Yisro, we see there we have the Parshas of Dinim again. We have these laws. That's when Yisro came to Moshe, and he saw that Moshe was giving out, judging these laws all day, and he assisted Moshe. He gave him good advice on how to set up the court system. So we see that the Torah is in the middle, preceded by Dinim, preceded by these laws, and followed by these laws. The Medrash asked this question. And the Medrash says, because this is how the Torah walks. It brings a pasuk from Mishle, Perechas Pasuk Chof, Be'erech Stoka Aleich, B'seich Nesivus Mishpot. I will walk in the pathway of charity, which is between the paths of Mishpat. These laws are in front and are in back. And the Medrash gives an example. The example is, you have a Matanusi, you have a great queen, and she rides in her chariot. Her guards are before her and behind her. So does the Torah walk between the Mishpot, which come before her and after her. Now the Maral explains, what does all of this mean? He says, the Dinim, these Dinim that we are referring to, that are known as Mishpot, they are the Shmira. They represent Shmira, the guardianship, the guards of the world. Just like there, the queen is in the middle, and she has her guards in front and her guards behind her. What does this mean, he says? When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world, he gave everything its gvul, its place. He created the Shemayim Va'oretz, the heaven and the earth. The heavens have its place, the earth has its place. He created Yom Valaylo. Day has its place. Night has its place. For example, he told the sun, your place, you will rule during the day. The moon will rule at night. The Yam, Yabosho, the sea has its place. And the dry land has its place. And the whole world has its gvulim. This is your place, this is yours. That's someone else's place, that's his. You are not to cross this gvul, this boundary. The sun doesn't dare to try to rule at night. And the moon will not dare to try to rule during the day. The earth will not take away from the territory of the sea, and the sea will not take away from the territory of the sun. At the territory of the dry land of the earth. And this is Mishpat. Because the Mishpat are the straight lines, the gvulim, the limitations. And this represents something which is straight. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world which he placed limitations, and his limitations are in accordance to his wisdom, which is Yoshur, perfectly straight. And they cannot be bent, not to the right or not to the left. Tzedakah, charity can be bent. You can give a little more, you can give a little less. Kula mitzvah, it's all mitzvah. Chesed, you can bend it. Do a little more, a little less. Mishpat can't be bent. You do a little more for Reuben, you're stealing from Shimon. You're doing a little more from Shimon, you're stealing from Reuben. What will I say? Look, give him a little more land. It's very nice. You give my land to him. And that's why it states, HaMishpat Lelekim Hu. It says in the Torah, Mishpat belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He is the only true judge. Because by Bnei Adam, by us, we can't walk a perfectly straight line, so we go a little to the right or to the left. By Tzedakah it's alright, by Chesed it's alright, by Rachamim it's alright, by other qualities it's alright, but it's not Mishpat, that's Kilkel HaMishpat. Distortion of the Mishpat. The Gemara says, you know, today they're finding out what's doing out in the heavens. And they thought that with the new nuclear microscopes, whatever it is, they will find out. And now they're telling us that the more they're seeing, the less they know. The less they know. Because there are not thousands or millions, but billions of stars and of planets, of celestial beings. Endless and endless. Mentioned many times, there was an article, they asked Albert Einstein, this is the man of the century. They asked him, with all of the knowledge that we have now and you've given the world, how much have we advanced? He says, I'll tell you how much we've advanced. Before it was like looking at the heavens through your window, and now it's like going up on the roof of the house and looking at the heavens. He says, that's how much we've advanced. The Gemara says, in these millions and billions of planets and stars and Milky Ways and celestial beings and galaxies and whatnot, it says if one of them would be 1 microsecond off of the schedule which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created for it, it would destroy the world. That's the Mishpat he laid down. Everyone has its kibul, its place, and dare not go out. That's why the Maral writes, the whole Maase Bereishis, in the whole creation of the world, the 7 days, it states there always Elohim. It uses the Shem Hashem Elohim, because Elohim, the Gemara says, is Midas Hadin, Midas Mishpat. The Bezdin was known as Elohim. That represents the Mishpat. God is Baruch who created everything with Mishpat. And therefore this is the Shmira, this is the structure. Now, there must be the structure. The world is the structure. If there is no structure, there is no world. Once we have the structure, then you can come to higher levels. Then you can come to a level of Eretz Yisrael, of Beis Hamikdash, the sacrifices, and so forth and so on. That's why the Torah says, Be'erech Tzedakah Ahalech, I walk in the ways of Tzedakah, of charity and righteousness. B'seich Nesivus HaMishpat, but guarded by the paths of Mishpat. Like the queen that is carried by her chariot, but her guards in front and her guards in back. So the Mishpat represents the limitations, the structure, the discipline of the universe, the discipline of the human being. Now, if you give thought in what we are speaking about, when we speak about these laws, we're not speaking about civil law. We're not speaking about monetary laws, like the nations of the world refers to them. We're not speaking about merely laws of damages, acts, and so forth. But what we're giving is a broad definition to self-discipline. Cognizance of the rights of others. Responsibility towards the rights to others. Accountability for your actions to others. And fair play, which is yosha. The rest is just the application. This is the basis of the law. What is the basis of the law? The basis of the law is who was right and who was wrong. Was there fair play or not fair play? Who's responsible and who's not responsible? Who's accountable and who's not accountable? Who's liable and who's not liable? Who had the rights and whose rights were taken away from him? Who abused his rights? Or was his rights, or did the other person abuse his rights? You have two neighbors. This is a whole area in the Shas. One neighbor says, I have a right. I have rights to do in my property as I see fit. So I plant a tree. I have a right to plant trees. Meanwhile, the roots grow into my next door neighbor and they start to damage his well. So he says, well, then cut the roots away. And I say, what, I am obligated every month to come out and start chopping roots away, and that's breaking down my well. You cut your tree down. He says, but I have rights to plant trees in my yard. And I says, I have rights to have a well in my yard. Who has the rights and who's abusing the rights? I certainly have right to play the radio in my house. But the lady upstairs says, it keeps her from sleeping. So therefore what, I have to stop living. I have rights. So the question is, who's utilizing their rights and who's abusing their rights? This is the basis of the Mishpatim. The basis of the Mishpatim is the recognition of another person's rights, how far they extend and how far they do not extend, and how far does your rights extend and how far does it not extend, based on what is Mishpat Yosher, the straight lines. And if someone abuses his rights, is he accountable? Then how much is he accountable? What is his liability? What are we speaking about? We're speaking about the structure of a human being, the discipline of a person. What is a person that doesn't recognize this? Let's say you got a person, which is very common today. And look, I gotta look at myself. Other people, they gotta take care of themselves. That's their problem. That's what the Torah calls Per Odom. Per Odom, that's what it referred to Yishmael. Per Odom he will be. A wild man. Yod Bakol. His hands will not be in his property, but his hands will be in everybody else's property. He will not recognize that there are other people. He will not recognize that there are other rights. He will not recognize that there are other ownerships. There's just me in the world. And on that the Torah calls him Pera Odom. Pera Odom means wild person, a person without any discipline, without any restrictions, without any limitations imposed upon himself. What was a Pera Odom called in Yiddish? A Wilde Chaya. What did you call a child that had a sense of responsibility, that had a sense of fairness, that was an odom, a mensch? And what was a child called that comes in and he sits on a chair and breaks it, and he knocks off a dish, and he uses something and he leaves it there, and he bumps into people and he doesn't say, I'm sorry? Wilde Chaya, Pero Odom. Now, we're not speaking of far-fetching legal terms that only the professors of law schools understand, and that they can debate endlessly in the courts, where they claim that the wheels of justice never stop, they just turn slowly. We're speaking here of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Yoshua, and what he demanded from the human being. And where was someone supposed to get this from? You think it's sufficient, it's very, very important what his mother has keep telling him. Sit straight. Don't bump into people. Don't take that, it's not yours. That's very important. But it's not enough. Who teaches him this? Who teaches the individual this, which is contrary to his whole nature? Because by nature he wants to be a per odom, doesn't want any limitations. Yodah b'kol, he wants everything that he sees. Who teaches him this? The home, there's no time. The school, they're occupied with more important things. Teaching 3-year-olds how to operate computers, otherwise, heaven forbid, their life is finished. See? So where do they learn this? The answer is they don't learn it. And therefore you have a world like we have. They don't learn it. And therefore you have a world of periodic. But the Jew that took a young child, and the first Mishnah he could start learning, all of a sudden he's hit with responsibility. If you're walking along and you kick someone's jug and it breaks, who's responsible? All of a sudden he's hit with a new concept. What do you mean? What do you want from me? And again he said, if you have an animal and he bites someone, who's responsible? And if you find something, what must you do with it? Why should I do anything with it? I don't want to do anything with it. No! And if someone gave you something to watch and you were negligent, you have to pay for it. It's drummed in and in and in and in until it becomes second nature that wherever he walks, he knows there are other people, and people have rights just like he has rights, and people have ownerships just like he has ownerships. And the Torah demands from him that you have to deal with everyone in accordance to their rights, in accordance to your responsibilities. And this is all built on what is fair to him and what is fair to you. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shlomo HaMelech said in Keheles, he creates a man yosher. He has an intuition of fairness. If you ever notice on a child, he takes someone else's toy, the mother takes it away and says, that's not yours, that's Beryl's. He'll cry. But he'll stop. But if you take away his toy and give it to Beryl, he'll cry bitterly, and he won't stop, because that was mine. Kodesh Baruch Hu imbued a person with the spirit of fairness. Today in the world, what is the fairness? It's the Olympics, which have been under investigation, major investigations of all of the fraud and the deceit and the millions and the billions. Because Pera Odom, whoever taught them that. And the Torah considers this area from the greatest area of human development. The Gemara in Baba Basra says, Kosha Einishal Mishkole Shesu Min Arais. One has to be careful with the mitzvah of fair measures and fair weights, even more than that of prohibited unions between men and women. And it was always traditional that the tzaddikim gedolim, the chassidim, harishayim, the great righteous people, this is what they were praised in their yashrus, in their uprightness, in their assumption of this responsibility to other people, and not to tread on something which belongs to someone. This is what they were praised in. I was 9 years in the Telzi Yeshiva, and I never can I remember, not to my recollection, hear someone that was praised because he ate glatt kosher or mahadri. There were those that ate it, but nobody praised him on it. Chol of Israel. The yeshiva drank regular milk. There were certain individuals, and even certain individual Rosh Yeshivas, that went to the effort to get what is known as Chol of Israel. They never praised themselves on it, and they never heard others praise them on it. They did it. I never heard anyone being praised because he had tefillin which were so mahudar. They all put on tefillin. In fact, I remember one time that we received a pair of tefillin from Eretz Yisrael. In those days it wasn't easy. Very mahudar, and we were looking at it in the Beis HaMedrash. And the gifter came by. He had just walked in and was wondering what was going on. So we showed him the tefillin. He says, beautiful tefillin. But don't let it take away from your learning. Go quickly. Don't let it take away from your learning. Never heard anybody being praised because he bought special mezuzahs for his house. If he did, he did. But that was the end of the story. Or if he was brought such beautiful matzahs or an esrog. Or if he had such beautiful tzitzis. Or on the clothes that he wore. If he wore a If someone would wear a black suit or a black hat or a capote, whatever it might be. Never heard anyone praised on that. So 9 years, what was the shvach? What did I hear? People praised on. First I heard praise on Amelis Betorah. Those that labored day and night in learning Torah. Then I heard on Midos. Those who had good midas, good qualities of humility, of erech hapayim, of kindness, generosity. And then I heard those who were careful in their dealings with others in these laws. These were the praises that we heard. Today, we're seeing a shifting of emphasis. And maybe that's why people ask questions. Look, with children, you should learn with them. Shulchan Aruch Aruch Chaim. Teach them how to daven Shmein Esra better. Teach them about tzitzit. Teach them about a mezuzah. Kashrus. This was taken for granted. It was done, but it wasn't the emphasis. It was not the emphasis. So they were seeing a shifting of emphasis. But unfortunately, it's not only a shifting of emphasis, this is a falsification of Torah values. This is not the Torah values. Let me perhaps illustrate what we're talking about from a number of episodes. It was written, it said, on the great Reb Lezer Gordon, Reb Lezer Telz, when he became the Rav of Telz. He went into all of the shops, all the Jewish shops, and he checked all of their weights and measures. And not all of the business people like this. If he found it wrong, he told them they better get it fixed immediately. Not all of the business like this. They said, what are you interfering with us for? He says, if I have the right to check kashrus, then 100 times more so it's my responsibility to check the weights and measures. Another story on the blazer. It was brought to his attention that the matzah factory, that before the Pesach, they had a deadline. They had an enormous amount to finish. There were working widows and young girls. Everybody had to work there. They were working them long hours without rest. He investigated and he told them that if you do not stop this immediately, I'm not worried about, I don't care about deadlines, if you do not stop this immediately, I will announce in the city that your matzahs are not kosher for Pesach. He says, the halachos of a pale how to treat a worker is more important. Just recently I read a story. Now this was not only Lithuania, this was all over. This was anywhere where there was Torah values. I read a story about Rabbi Yisrael Chaim Zannenfeld, Zichrei Lebrochi. He was the head of the Hungarian community in the old Yishuv in Yerushalayim at the turn of the century. The old Yishuv was very, very poor, enormously poor. And most of their support came from outside. Money which was contributed from Hungary and other places. In one of the cities in Hungary, a woman came to a Rav, and she was wealthy, and she said she's been married for a long time, she does not have a child yet. Here's a great sum of money. Please send it, give it to someone who's a great tzaddik, that he should be mispadel for me, he should pray for me, and I want him to use the money. So the person said, there's no greater tzaddik than Reb Yisrael Chaim Zannenfeld. I'll send it to Yerushalayim, I'll send him the check. He's very, very poor, but he says, I know him, he won't use it for himself. He might take a little himself, but he'll divide it amongst all of the needy families there that are starving. And I'll send him the check with the message. He did so. About a month later, the husband comes storming into the Rav's house, and he said, what right did you have to do that? I never gave permission to my wife to take such a sum of money and send it away. And the Rav was all shaken up. He says, it never entered my mind. I thought for sure that she must have your permission. And this is the halacha. The halacha is that you're not allowed to take money from a woman unless you know it's her own for some reason, or if she's married woman, unless you have permission from the wife, from the husband. And he didn't know what to do. He was all shaken up. And the man was very, very angry. It was a large sum. He says, how can I write to Yerushalayim and ask him for the money back? He says, it's probably fed all of the families there for the last month. Just then, the post comes. He opens the letter. It's from Yisrael Chaim Zannenfeld, and there's the check. He says, you did not stipulate that this woman had permission from her husband to give me such a check. Until it is clarified, I cannot accept it. Therefore, I'm sending it back to you. In the meantime, I still will be mispalo for her, as if she gave me the check. These were the praises of the great Gedalim. Now, someone would say, but you need the money. Your families need, there's so many families that need the money. No, the halacha is the halacha there. It's gezel. He wouldn't touch it. He wouldn't even keep the check and then write me back. Because maybe then I put him in a position where he'd have to agree to it. Send back the check, and he'll know that if he wants to, he knows my address. These were the praises. There were the great stories on the great Ger Rebbe. Ger was a city, a little city, not far from Warsaw. But it had a great, great Hasidic following, Ger Hasidim, hundreds of thousands it developed into. And the Ger leaders were great Talmid Chachamim. There are a number of stories. One was the Ger Rebbe, he used to wear what was known as a sputak. It was a round fur hat. And all of the Hasidim then would wear that also. As the Kehillah grew, and it grew, so the sputak business became a very lucrative business. And many Jews were becoming wealthy, having factories that would manufacture these hats. All right. But one day the Ger Rebbe looked into it and he found out that because they had such a market and there was such a demand, they were profiteering. They were charging much higher than they should. He didn't know any, not like today's courts. The wheels of justice move slowly. He called them in. He says, if by tomorrow your prices are not what they should be, then I will go out tomorrow with a cap and we'll see what will be with your businesses. You will be bankrupt. Because if the Rebbe put on a cap, all of the Hasidim also would. And then there was another story said on the Ger. Came before a Yantif. And Ger started to really flourish because Ger was a small city, but Warsaw was massive. Warsaw, I don't know how many Jews were there. I've seen different estimates. Anywhere from 250,000 to 1 million Jews lived in Warsaw before the war. And as time went on, enormous amount of Hasidim from Warsaw would go to Ger to spend Yom Tov there so they could be near the Rebbe. So when it came before a Yom Tov, you could imagine the demand for fish for Yom Tov. And one time the Ger Rebbe, he heard the prices spiraled. It was an opportunity to make a lot of money. They pushed their prices way up. He called them in and said that I'll give you till tomorrow to bring your prices down. Otherwise, I will announce that all of that fish is treif. You're not allowed to eat it. And you'll see how long you'll remain in business. These were the stories that were said on such gedalim. When we were in St. Louis, there was an old Jew. This goes back 30 years ago, almost. And there was we were there before, longer. We came to St. Louis before 30 years. And there was an old Jew, he was already in his 80s. And he and his wife lived in Radin. His name was Louis Raskis. He lived in Radin. They had a pharmacy there. So I said, tell me about the Chofetz Chaim. He says, tell you about the Chofetz Chaim. He says, a Jew could not take advantage of a goy in the Rabbin. Because the minute the goy suspected that it was an unfair deal, he would threaten, "I'll go to the Chofetz Chaim." And immediately then things changed. He says, "That's about the Chofetz Chaim." This was the shvach, the praise of the Chofetz Chaim. The Chofetz Chaim writes in the Sefer Mitzvah HaKotzer. This I can thank Stefan, just showed me today, because we were discussing it last week. In the Sefer Mitzvah HaKotzer, that's where he writes on these Taryag Mitzvahs, but in a very short fashion. In Mitzvah Essay Mem, the deals with Leisachmaid. Excuse me, Mitzvah Leisasem. Negative commandment, Leisachmaid, which states in the Ten Commandments, that means that you shall not covet what belongs to your fellow man. Now, what it means more than that, it means you shall not covet what belongs to your fellow man and go through all types of maneuvers to try to get it from him in any fashion, even if you pay for it, even if you get him to agree to it, if he is not 100% willing to do so. This is Leisachmaid. The Gemara brings one of the greatest Hasidim in the Gemara was Rav Pinchas ben Yair. The Gemara writes on Rav Pinchas ben Yair that he was so great, he says, we don't come not only to Rav Pinchas ben Yair, but afilu lechamor shel Rav Pinchas ben Yair, even to his donkey. Because one time he was traveling and they brought some grain for his donkey to eat. And Meisher, what was supposed to be taken off for the levy and so forth, was not, and the donkey refused to eat. So it says, we don't even come to his donkey. Now, Rav Pinchas ben Yair said, "Mi yomai leinene mishal chaveri." He says, "I have a principle all my life that I have never eaten by anyone else." So one would think today, if somebody says he doesn't eat by someone else, why he doesn't trust the kashrus? Nah, no, that wasn't for him. Why won't he eat by someone else? Because there are those that they want to give me, but they don't have enough. So I'm going to be taking from what they need. He says, that's not for me. That's going into the areas of Geneva. Or there'll be those who they have plenty, but they don't want to give me. They're only giving me because they have no choice, out of embarrassment. He says, that's not for me, that's also Geneva. That's Leisachmaid. This is a Gemara in the first parak in Chulin. And the Gemara brings how Rabbi Yehuda Anossi, the great Rabbi Yehuda Anossi, was so happy he was coming to his town and he was hoping that he would come and eat by him. And he said that, "I can't turn down Rabbi Yehuda Anossi, but I had this principle all of my life. But still I can't turn him down. Mishamayim HaKadosh Baruch Hu made something happen that he was not able to eat by him. So he shouldn't have to break his rule." This was the great Chosid, Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair. The Chofetz Chaim writes, he says, what is, and he's writing in his time, he says, "Motzu is there." He says, to maneuver someone into giving you something, even though he will give it to you with willfully, to press him for it, to embarrass him to give it. He says, "This motzu is there b'chosin." By a chosin, she machbid al chesnei kedem ahasana. She yiten leidover pleni upleni mashalei hisna al zeh bishas ksivas atanoim. He says a chosin agrees to marry a person's daughter before the agreement, they discuss the dowry. It's settled. They're engaged. Now the chosin tells the future father-in-law, who might have a lot of money, he says, "You know, we
don't have enough furniture, and we don't have a good flat, and we don't have a good car, and we don't have this. And he keeps leaning on him and leaning on him. The Chofetz Chaim says he'll be Eivel Leisachmoid. He transgresses the negative commandment of Leisachmoid. Afal pi shechaisnoi mamale mevukoshose, afal pi kein Eivel Achosan alam zeh de Leisachmoid. Even though the father-in-law will willfully give it to him, but he was pushed into giving him. It was not 100% of his own free will. He says, he's a Eivel Leisachmoid, that's one of the Ten Commandments. Meidoch Isa, from the other aspect, the Chofetz Chaim, there's 100 stories how he would go when it came to these laws, to the extreme of the extreme. Yet he wasn't an extreme on other things. His son writes on him. You would think the Chofetz Chaim, when it came to Lulav and Esrog, he would go to the extreme. His son writes on him that his father never owned his own Lulav and Esrog. He always bought with partners, with many other Balabatim in the shul. Never owned his own. And when they asked him why not, he says, I'm not a kfir, I'm not a wealthy Jew, I'm a poor Jew. This was the Chofetz Chaim. Rebbe Elimeir Bloch, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, tells a Rav, Rosh Yeshiva, who established the Telzer branch in America. I remember one time they had to pay a call box in the yeshiva. And they had some smart, clever yeshiva bachrim, if you could call them yeshiva bachrim. And they figured out, and they were always making long distance calls because they were from New York, and meanwhile yeshiva was in Cleveland. They figured out how to manipulate the phone where they could make long distance calls without paying for it. One day an inspector from the telephone company comes down. And he wanted to know who's in charge. We sent him to Rebbe Elimeir. The next day Rebbe Elimeir called an immediate shmuz, shir das. This was the major shir that he would give to the yeshiva. Called immediately. He opened it, he says, Ich tracht wegen vermachen die yeshiva. I am thinking of closing the yeshiva. That was his opening words. I am thinking of closing the yeshiva. He says, Ich gekommen zu Amerika zu schaffen a yeshiva for ganovim. I came to America to make a yeshiva for ganovim. And then he went on for about an hour and a half. There was another time when there was a poor bocher in the yeshiva. He wasn't very clever. He was a little slow. But he was very good with his hands. Very good with his hands. So he could fix things and repair things. So people found out he was so good with his hands. They would always call him over to fix things in their house and so forth. This was in the yeshiva community. Fix the machines, radios, wash machines, things like that, build. But since he was not very clever and he was a very poor boy anyhow, and this and that, they'd throw him a few coins. One day Rebbe Elimeir found out about it. I couldn't understand Yiddish well then. But I remember him shouting over and over again, Mihi Tirolachem. Mihi Tirolachem. Who gave you the right to do such a thing? Where in the Torah did you have a right to do such a thing? For an hour. This is what these halachas meant to these Jews. There was Rav Gifter. I remember once I was by a bris mila with him. And they asked him to make the bracha on the case, on the cup of wine. They were giving him a cup of wine. It was in the lounge. He said, bring me a plate for the cup of wine. He says, will nicht machen jenem's carpet schmutzig. He says, I don't want to make someone's carpet dirty, be mazik. This comes when you're taught Talarovas Nizikin as a young boy. there was the time Rav Gifter said, he said in Tells, he said there was a very poor Jew, and he was called the Tells Tzaddik from the city. He was called the Tzaddik of the city. He was a very poor Jew. His honesty was so great that they put him in charge of the local Gemach, the local Chesed fund. He says, what was his sitkis, for example? He ran a shop. He says, when we, the Bochrim, used to come in, he used to tell us, oi, oi, oi. He says, you're Bochrim, you have no money. Why do you buy from me? He says, you should go over to Beryl. Beryl has a larger shop, and therefore he can sell things for a penny cheaper. Why do you come and buy from me? See? This was the praise of the Tzaddik of the city. There was the time, I remember, when there was a woman, a widow, and they put her in charge of the kitchen, Jewish woman. And then, about a month later, there was a tumult, a murmur. Some of the Bochrim saw they had complaints on her standard of kashrus in the kitchen of the yeshiva. And they started murmuring and murmuring. They came as a group to Rav Gifter. He threw them out. Threw them out. He says, don't come to me with that. He says, I am chashish my elam habo. I'm worried about my elam habo. I will have nothing to do with being redef an almona from her panoso. I'll have nothing to do with driving a widow out from her employment. I once heard from a Hasidish sheikhet. He told me he had a father, a great tzaddik. He says, I'll give you an idea of the tzitkis of my father. He says, where we came from, there were two sheikhtim. Each one was employed on his own. Not like you're all under the bed. Each one did business for himself. One day, the sheikhet that my father used to go to, who was very, very careful, he made a little intimation. Little remark to let my father know that the other sheikhet is not 100% as careful as he should be. He says, what did my father do? He says, you think he stopped eating from the other sheikhet? He stopped eating from that sheikhet. He says, a sheikhet which can read Loshon Hara, a sheikhet that can say Loshon Hara on another sheikhet, and on top the mazik is panoso, jeopardizes panoso, that's not a kosher sheikhet. Won't eat from that sheikhet anymore. These were the old Jews. The emphasis have shifted drastically and tragically. And this is a falsification of Torah values. And this is what I once said over from Urbaran Soloveitchik. He should be well. Rabban Soloveitchik, it's the brother from Rabbi Yeshiva, the son of Ramesha, the grandson of Rabbi Chaim Brisker. They once called him to speak. They asked him to speak on the subject, why do we see a deterioration of morals, but not in the general Jewish community. In the so-called Fruma Jewish community, we see a deterioration of morals. So he started his talk. He said that he had served as chaplain for the penitentiaries in the New York area. And he used to go there and he would see so-called Fruma Jews who are sitting in jail because they were involved in fraudulent business deals. Stock market manipulations, big fraud. New York, when you talk big, it's big. I'm talking millions. They were Fruma Jews, though. So they would organize that everything that was served to them should be under the OU, should be kosher. He knew that because he was the chaplain. They probably worked it through him. Comes Pesach. They said, we will not eat the OU. It has to be a better heksher. It has to be mahadrin. Pesach. He says, this is something that America or the Western culture has created. He says, why? He says, don't get me wrong. In Lithuania and Poland, we had Jewish ganovim. We had plenty ganovim. But we never had a ganov that asked for mahadrin. Only today in America, with the distortion of Torah values, can you have people sitting in jail for stealing, for theft of millions, but eating mahadrin. Because in the old Torah values, sure there were ganavim, Jewish ganavim, but they didn't hold themselves for upright Jews, and therefore they weren't interested in mahadrin. A Jew that held himself for uprightness to the point where he would be mahadr on what he ate, he was mahadr 100 times more on someone else's money. This creation, he said, is what has been created in post-war Jewish culture. So this evening, I hope we gave somewhat of a clarification on what the mitzvahs mishpotim are, why throughout it was tradition that so much labor was made in it, was put into it at all levels. Yeshiva Gdolis, great Lomdim, Balabatim, or even young children. This is what instilled in a person, it made him into a man instead of a pera odom, where it brought to him the cognizance that there are other people also who also have rights, and he has to learn how to live together with them.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at PO Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.